Thanks for listening to our podcast. We've got more information and additional resources at probe.org/podcast. And be sure to check out our life-changing Summer Mind Games Camp for high school and college students.
Ethics and ethnics. Easy to confuse when talking about cultural relativism. Kirby Anderson describes this moral quagmire now on Probe.
Any student in a class on anthropology cannot help but notice the differences between various cultures of the world. Differences in dress, diet, and social norms are readily apparent. Such diversity in terms of ethics and justice are also easily seen and apparently shaped by the culture in which we live. If there is no transcendent ethical standard, then often culture becomes the ethical norm for determining whether an action is right or wrong. This ethical system is known as cultural relativism. Cultural relativism is the view that all ethical truth is relative to a specific culture. Whatever a cultural group approves is considered right within that culture. Conversely, whatever a cultural group condemns is wrong. Now, the key to cultural relativism is that right and wrong can only be judged relative to a specified society. There is no ultimate standard of right and wrong by which to judge culture. Now, a famous proponent of this view was John Dewey, often considered the father of American education. He taught that moral standards were like language, and therefore the result of custom. Language evolved over time and eventually became organized by a set of principles known as grammar. But language also changes over time to adapt to the changing circumstances of its culture. Likewise, Dewey said, ethics were also the product of an evolutionary process. There are no fixed ethical norms. These are merely the result of a particular culture's attempt to organize a set of moral principles. But these principles can also change over time to adapt to the changing circumstances of the culture. Now, this would mean that different forms of morality evolved in different communities. Thus, there are no universal ethical principles. What may be right in one culture would be wrong in another culture, and vice versa. Although it is hard for us in the modern world to imagine, a primitive culture might value genocide, treachery, deception, even torture. A true follower of cultural relativism could not say these are wrong since they are merely the product of cultural adaptation. Clifford Geertz argued that culture must be seen as webs of meaning within which humans must live. Geertz believed that humans are shaped exclusively by their culture, and there exists no unifying cross-cultural human characteristics. So as we'll see this week, cultural relativism allows us to be tolerant towards other cultures, but it provides no basis to judge or evaluate other cultures and their practices.
You've been listening to Probe with your host, Kirby Anderson. Get a free copy of Kirby's transcript, Cultural Relativism, by going online at probe.org. Join us next time as we deliver the wide view of your world, God's view, here on Probe.
Cultural relativism is the view that all ethical judgments are relative to a specific culture. Yesterday, we documented how John Dewey argued that different forms of morality evolved in different cultures. Now, a key figure who expanded on Dewey's ideas was William Graham Sumner of Yale University. He argued that what our conscience tells us depends solely upon our social group. The moral values we hold are not part of our moral nature, according to Sumner. They are part of our training and upbringing. Now, Sumner argued in his book, Folkways, that world philosophy, life policy, right, rights, and morality are all products of the folkways. In other words, what we perceive as conscience is merely a product of culture upon our minds through childhood training and cultural influence. There are no universal ethical principles, merely different cultural conditioning. Now, Sumner studied all sorts of societies, both primitive and advanced, and was able to document numerous examples of cultural relativism. Although many cultures promoted the idea that a man could have many wives, Sumner discovered that in Tibet, a woman was encouraged to have many husbands. He also described how some Eskimo tribes allowed deformed babies to die by being exposed to the elements. In the Fiji Islands, aged parents were killed. Now, Sumner believed that this diversity of moral values clearly demonstrated that culture is the sole determinant of our ethical standards. In essence, culture determines what is right and wrong, and different cultures come to different ethical conclusions. Now, proponents of cultural relativism believe that this cultural diversity proves that culture alone is responsible for our morality. There is no soul, no spirit, or mind, or conscience. Moral relativists say that what we perceive as moral convictions or conscience are the byproducts of culture. Now, the strength of cultural relativism is that it allows us to withhold moral judgments about the social practices of another culture. In fact, proponents of cultural relativism would say that to pass judgment on another culture would be ethnocentric. This strength, however, is also a major weakness. Cultural relativism excuses us from judging the moral practices of another culture. Yet we all feel compelled to condemn such actions as the Holocaust or ethnic cleansing. Yet cultural relativism as an ethical system provides no foundation for doing so. Cultural relativism is based upon the assumption that moral values are shaped and determined by one's culture. It begins with the assumption that there are no universal or transcendent values to judge right and wrong. Melville Herskovitz wrote in Cultural Relativism that judgments are based upon experience, and experience is interpreted by each individual in terms of his own enculturation. In other words, a person's judgment about what is right and wrong is determined by their cultural experiences. This would include everything from childhood training to cultural pressures to conform to the majority views of the group. Herskovitz went on to argue that even the definition of what is normal and abnormal is relative to culture. Now, he believed that cultures were flexible, and so ethical norms change over time. The standard of ethical conduct may change over time to meet new cultural pressures or demands. When populations are unstable and infant mortality is high, cultures value life and develop ethical systems to protect it. When a culture is facing overpopulation, a culture redefines ethical systems and even the value of life. Life is valuable and sacred in the first society. Mercy killing might become normal and acceptable in the second society. Polygamy might be a socially acceptable standard for society, but later that society might change its perspective and believe that it is wrong for a man to have more than one wife. Herskovitz believed that whatever a society accepted or rejected became the standard of morality for the individuals in that society. He believed that the need for a cultural relativistic point of view has become apparent because of the realization that there is no way to play this game of making judgment across cultures except with loaded dice. Ultimately, he believed culture determines our moral standards, and attempting to compare or contrast cultural norms is futile. Now, in a sense, the idea of cultural relativism has helped encourage such concepts as multiculturalism and postmodernism. After all, if truth is created, not discovered, then all truths created by a particular culture are equally true. This would mean that cultural norms and institutions should be considered equally valid if they are useful to a particular group of people within a culture. And this is one of the major problems with the view of cultural relativism. You cannot judge the morality of another culture. If there is no objective standard, then someone in that culture does not have the right to evaluate the actions and morality of another culture. Yet in our hearts we know that certain things like racism, discrimination, and exploitation are wrong. Foundational to the view of cultural relativism is the theory of evolution. Since social groups experience cultural change with the passage of time, changing customs and immorality evolve differently in different places and times. Anthony Flew, author of Evolutionary Ethics, states this perspective this way: all morals, ideas, and ideals have been originated in this world, and that, having thus in the past been subject to change, they are presumably in the future too, for better or worse, continue to evolve. He denies the existence of God and therefore an objective, absolute moral authority. But he also believes in the authority of a value system. Now, his theory is problematic because it does not adequately account for the origin, nature, and basis for morals. Flew suggests that morals somehow originated in this world and are constantly evolving. Now, even if we concede his premise, we must ask where and when did these first moral values originate? Essentially, Flew is arguing that a value came from a non-value. In rejecting the biblical idea of a creator whose character establishes a moral standard for values, Flew is forced to attempt to derive an ought from an is. Evolutionary ethics rests upon the assumption that values are by nature constantly changing or evolving. It claims that it is a value that values are changing. But is this value changing? If the answer to this question is no, then that would mean that moral values don't have to always change. And if that is the case, then we would have unchanging values known as absolute standards. However, if the value that values change is itself unchanging, then the view is self-contradictory. Another form of evolutionary ethics is sociobiology. E.O. Wilson of Harvard University is a major advocate of sociobiology and claims that scientific materialism will eventually replace traditional religion and other ideologies. According to sociobiology, human social systems have been shaped by an evolutionary process. A key principle is the reproductive imperative. The ultimate goal of any organism is to survive and reproduce. Moral systems exist because they ultimately promote human survival and reproduction. Another principle is that all behavior is selfish at the most basic level. We love our children, according to this view, because love is an effective means of raising effective reproducers. At the very least, sociobiology is a very cynical view of human nature and human societies. Are we really to believe that all behavior is selfish? Is there no altruism? The Bible and human experience seem to strongly contradict this. Ray Boland's article on the Probe website provides a detailed refutation of this form of evolutionary ethics. This week we've been talking about cultural relativism, and today I would like to conclude by providing an evaluation of this ethical system. Now, in attempting to evaluate cultural relativism, we should acknowledge that we could indeed learn many things from other cultures. No culture has a complete monopoly on the truth. Likewise, Christians must guard against the assumption that their Christian perspective on their cultural experiences should be normative for every culture. However, as we have already seen, the central weakness of cultural relativism is its unwillingness to evaluate another culture. This may seem satisfactory when we talk about language, customs, even forms of worship, but this non-judgmental mindset breaks down when confronted by real evils such as slavery or genocide. The Holocaust, for example, cannot be merely explained away as an appropriate cultural response to Nazi Germany. Cultural relativists face other philosophical problems. For example, it is insufficient to say that morals originated in the world and that they are constantly changing. Cultural relativists need to answer how value originated out of non-value. And fundamental to cultural relativism is the belief that values change. But if the value that values change is itself unchanging, then this theory claims an unchanging value that all values change and evolve. The position is self-contradictory. Another important concern is conflict. If there are no absolute values that exist transculturally or externally to the group, how are different cultures to get along when values collide? How are we to handle these conflicts? Moreover, is there ever a place for courageous individuals to challenge the cultural norm and fight against social evil? Cultural relativism seems to leave no place for social reformers. The abolition movement, the suffrage movement, and the civil rights movement are all examples of social movements that ran counter to the social circumstances of the culture. Abolishing slavery and providing rights to citizens are good things, even if they were opposed by many people within society. The Bible provides a true standard by which to judge attitudes and actions. Biblical standards can be used to judge individual sin as well as corporate sin institutionalized within a culture. By contrast, culture cannot be used to judge right and wrong. A changing culture cannot provide a fixed standard for morality. Only God's character revealed in the Bible provides a reliable measure for morality.